welcome to Game Brain, a podcast about our gaming group. I'm Ben Mandelker, and I'm joined here with Trey Alsop. Hey, Trey, what's going on?
Happy to be here. It's a lovely, hot Saturday morning in October of Los Angeles.
It's been like 100 degrees here all week, which is, you know, it's wild.
I noticed as I was driving over here that the public pools are closed.
Yes.
Like, they're still on like a 1955 schedule or something like that, right. As opposed to just like, no, October, it's like, no, it's still 90s like, over here. These pools should be open, people.
But it's after Labor Day.
Kids are back in school.
You don't swim after Labor Day. It's boiling here in Los Angeles, because, you know, climate change is just a disaster these days. Not to be political. I don't think it is political. I think it's like literally just looking out the window and like hurricanes in Los Angeles,
just the hottest year ever
in New York City, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
anyway, we're here in your lovely, office,
my bubble,
air conditioned
office bubble away from climate
insulated
change,
insulated from the world.
Yeah. Here to talk board
talk
games.
About games.
We've got board games to talk about. We got a lot of board games. Today, though, we're also going to be talking about directed aggression and like our thoughts on it, you know?
That's right.
Because we have a lot of thoughts on it. I feel like we are two players that can get into our feels. Given that everyone gets in their feels and everyone has emotional reactions to gaming, I feel like the two of us, in different ways, can, you know, have distinct reactions to aggression.
Yes. I don't think I want directed aggression in my life. Do I want it in my board games? I don't know. Like, it is kind of a personal topic, because I think what as younger Trey would have craved this, older Trey not as much, and maybe we're going to examine that transformation as we've evolved as gamers, and I've become a crusty old man who's not open to different experiences. So.
Yeah. But before that, let's talk about some of the games we played. Yeah. And I know you love a jingle. I know you love a jingle. So.
Games of the brain. These are games we like to play. These are games stuck on our brains, oh baby.
Thanks for bringing that back.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
I feel like these are the games on our brain, but that could have been the game night.
It could have been. I do the short game night because even though actually this is the month for the long game month jungle, that's like very haunted housey. But yeah, so let's talk about
We've got a lot of games built up here. I feel like I haven't.
Yeah.
I haven't been on for a while.
So talk to me. What do you want? What game do you want to talk about
first? We can start with last night.
Yeah.
We had the rare Friday night game night at Matt's because Tom's out of town.
Yes.
And we came in and Matt was setting up a game that we kind of touched base on a few years ago, but didn't really get into. But he had Coffee Traders all laid out to play, and I had played like half of a game before. I still have not played a complete game, which is kind of indicative of like it is a bit of a beast.
It is
but
a beast.
This is a cool game. Like, there's a lot going on.
It's a really good game. This was my second time playing it.
Right.
Actually, no, the first time I played it was with you and Alfred on TTS during quarantine.
Is that right?
We played one round. I think even Elder was on the game. Okay. And it did not take off like wildfire with Alfred and Elder. I know Alfred was hoping for a game that really expressed more of the experience of like going to a coffee house. I don't want to speak for Alfred necessarily, but this is what I vaguely remember was I think they were excited for a game that spoke of maybe the coffee supply chain, getting to the coffee house, barista, all that
kind of does. Yeah,
it does. But I think this game is still more, it's not really about that. And then I think Elder just at that time, at least, just wasn't into it. He may have pivoted, and it was just because it's a bear to teach, and there's a lot of moving parts.
Your player Matt is got a lot going on visually, because this game is played out in phases.
It feels like
six different phases in the three rounds of the game.
But it takes like an hour. It takes an hour to teach, which is kind of amazing that it takes an hour to teach, only because when you really boil down to what you're doing in this game is in phase one, you're either going to put a plantation out, a coffee plantation out, or you're going to staff those coffee plantations. That's basically what you're doing in phase one. And then phase two is like a micro phase where you put a meeple on something if you want. Phase three is you want to build a building. You want to like get in line to harvest some coffee, get that. Phase four is harvest your coffee. Phase five is fulfill a contract. It's actually so
fulfill
simple.
Contracts and deliver coffee to international city markets, you know, right. Cafes.
Which is very abstract, but like it's so simple. When I say it, that is simple what you're doing, but it's
yeah, yeah,
an
no,
hour
I don't think that, I don't think that's simple. I don't think that's simple. I don't think that's elegant. I think it's really cool. And I think it models what it's mm-hmm. trying to do. And in this, like the narrative is, I think that we are kind of like international coffee traders based out of Antwerp. Mm-hmm. And so like there's five different production areas that we're investing in different degrees and building plantations and staffing right. it and this type of thing. And then we sell to different markets. So I don't think this is an elegant game. And I don't mean as a criticism at all.
No.
But it has like six phases of play every round.
And there's piggybacking
round.
And this.
Yeah. So like it's a big tough teach. And I think what happened to me on the first play, maybe like Tabletop Simulator would not have helped.
Yeah.
Is I almost need to come up with a word for this, but there's times when my first experience with a game can feel just like overload. Mm-hmm. Like it was a tough teach and I'm almost like the satellite returning to Earth and I skim off the atmosphere.
Yeah.
We're like, I don't break through and I just kind of like bounce off and I'm like, I'm going to be coming back. Gravity's going to pull me in and I'll be traveling slower and I'll be able to pass through the atmosphere the second time. And that's kind of what happened here is like that first experience was enough that when I'm coming back to it now, I knew enough that it was grokkable
yeah.
in a way that it wasn't the first time. This happened to me also with like On Mars, which was also like I was at BGGCon and I was exhausted and I just couldn't handle the teach and had to kind of like tap out. And I just find like this happens sometimes with the more crunchy games.
Right. Well, especially because you were trying to do On Mars on the fly a little bit. But On Mars is exact. That's exactly what I was talking about when I say how this game sort of like if bird's eye view is pretty simple. On Mars, bird's eye view is not simple. On Mars, to even discuss it, well, there's this and there's this. Oh, you have this phase and this phase. You can build this, but you have to do this. But yeah,
are you in orbit? Are you on planet?
Yeah, but this one, when you look at it, you're like, what? The stuff I'm actually doing on my turn is not complicated.
In the moment, we're all kind of doing similar things.
Yeah.
So it's managed, like in an interesting way, like it's manageable once you're into it and playing it in a way that the teach feels overwhelming. Because like we got the full teach and Matt is an excellent board
kills
team
it. Yeah,
teacher.
He killed it.
Like just I'm so in awe in how he does it. But it's still like we got to the end of the teach and I still felt like, okay, we're starting the game. I have no idea what I'm actually supposed to do. We have all these options. What are we actually supposed to do? It's like, just place a plantation. Where's the right place to place a plantation?
It's just, the game is so tough. It's a hard, hard game. And you feel, as you play it, you're like, how am I going to make any sort of progress anywhere? But you do. You actually find ways through very limited margins to make things happen. I really enjoyed the game because the first time playing the game was about a year and a half ago. Whenever it first came out, I played with Candace and I played with Tom, and I don't remember who our fourth was. Maybe we were even five players, but we had a really fun time. I really enjoyed the game.
And you beat Tom.
And I did beat Tom.
Okay.
I don't know if he may remember that, but I did. It was one of those games where I was just like in the zone. It wasn't just, I just like had this outrageous score.
I felt like last night things were pretty tight.
Things were tight. I felt like I was doing well. I was happy with my game. I was excited to see where it was going to go. I still really enjoy the game. My issues that I had I had sort of two issues. One was that I just wasn't in the mood to play it.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is that Jordan and I were running late.
Oh, and that can be tough when you show up. You show up a little bit late because that Hollywood Bowl traffic.
So yeah, the Hollywood Bowl traffic, people who don't live in LA, Hollywood Bowl traffic is like a demonic force in this city. And we have to cross through it to get to Matt's.
Right.
Jordan and I do. And it was, I don't know who was playing, but they're awful people.
the effect of which though was, I think like Matt had to make a call.
He had to make a call, and I think
from his initial discussions, he thought both you and Jordan were down for it. Well, so maybe that was a mistake.
Well, because we had texted earlier in the day, and I was texting with Matt. We're like, oh, maybe we'll do maybe we're gonna do horseless carriage, and we talked about doing some Midwest, not Midwest, but midweight euros, midwestern euros. Like, hey, you want to play this game? It'll be real fun. And so Coffee Traders was...
We are not suggesting that the Midwest is midweight.
No, definitely not. But Coffee Traders was mentioned as a game, and so I...
It's a serious setup. So,
but I just, yeah. I was like, I said, yeah, I like Coffee Traders because in my mind, I'm thinking, we'll, when we get to the table tonight, we'll discuss all these options.
Right.
And then we'll make a decision. And so what happened was we were running late. And so Coffee Traders, you know, Matt had to make a call.
Yeah.
And then it's just one of those things where it's like, I can't show up 20 minutes late and say, guys, I don't want to play this. That's just a dick move. I think it's a dick move. It's set up as big setup, and I say I don't want to play this.
I feel like you could, but I understand why you didn't. And you want to be considerate.
My issue in life, the issue that I have perpetually, especially in this game group, and it's not the game group's fault. It's a Ben issue. Is that I don't want, if I see people excited to play something, I don't want to shit on their excitement.
Yep.
And so if Matt has set up
Coffee Traders, I find myself in that space too.
Yeah. And so like
I have strong feelings about games a lot of times.
Yeah. And so like I saw in the text earlier, I saw Matt was getting excited. Jordan was getting excited. Jordan's like, I can learn the rules. And Matt was like, I can learn the rules too. And so already in my mind, I was like, this is probably gonna be Coffee Traders tonight. So I should have already steeled my mind.
Can
for
you
it.
Make peace with that? Would it have helped?
I don't know. I don't know what my issue is, but the point is, like, we show up late. I just don't want to shit on someone else's excitement. But then what happens is I go through this psychological thing where I feel unheard.
Yeah.
And that's not,
and I've seen you do that.
Yeah. And it's not,
I missed
anyone's
it last
fault.
Night, but I've seen you when,
well, but because it's like, but it's like, I just don't, I think is the, what I go through is it worth me being heard and like ruining everyone's joy?
That's not like, really what would happen. That's not what would happen, though.
In my mind, that's what would happen. In my mind, I say I'm not gonna show up late and be like, guys, I don't want to play this.
Sure.
And then people are like, Matt's really excited and Jordan's excited, and then like I just don't want to be that person. Well, but then what happens though is that then like, and that would be fine, but I don't push through as well as like, actually, I felt like I pushed through okay. Like I don't feel like I was like a dick too much at the table.
I was unaware until Matt kind of noticed that you seemed a little.
Well, I was, so then the other issue I was having was that the game was taking a long time.
Yeah.
So I was like, so part of me was like, I just genuinely was like, oh my goodness, I don't know if I'm like mentally up for Coffee Traders right now going into it. I was like, it's such an intense game. And also because we had talked about like doing midweight euros earlier, I was sort of excited to do a midweight euro. And so,
and we consider this heavier.
This is a heavy game.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of wanted, but I was like, it's fine. I do love a heavy game. I love a heavy game, but I was sort of like, okay, it's fine. And then, but the turns were taking a long time for me because I found that I knew what I wanted to do. And then I didn't, this was an issue that I had with Voidfall, which is that I knew what I wanted to do. And there was, then I just sort of had to sit there.
Right.
And so I think that compounded with, not really wanting to play the game made it a tough play for me. And so I was just quieter.
Yeah.
But I still really, this is not the game's fault because I really like this. I love this game, actually. I think this is a great game. I just, in that moment, didn't want to play it and then was sitting there through long turns.
Yeah, you know, couple thoughts. Like, one, I don't want to speak for other people, but, like, I want you to know, like, I understand that and I would have your back. Like, I think with our group, if you actually be like, guys, I'm sorry, I just really don't play Coffee Traders, I think everybody in that room would have totally been okay with it. And speaking for myself, I totally would have been okay with that. I think that's one of the strengths of our normal Friday night game is, like, we've been having play counts at 10 and 12. Mm-hmm. So we've been having three games a lot of times.
Yeah.
So that's different when there's five people, one game. There's plenty of times where there's a game at Tom's and I'm like, I do not want to play that.
Yeah.
But there's two other tables. So it works out.
Yeah. You know? But the difference there also is that you don't show up 20 minutes late to Tom's and then the games are being set up and you say, I don't want to play that. Right. You say, well, this is what I've got to do. And so like I was also, because then you also have the meta the meta thing that happens where you say, I'm mad that I'm upset right now. Mm-hmm. I'm mad that like I'm upset about this because like I'm with my friends. I still was having a good time. Mm-hmm. I just was like quieter at the table because I just didn't want to play the game. And so, and I was also starving. Notice that I did, once I had my Burger King,
things
improved. I was a little bit more chipper, but that you have that meta thing where you're thinking like, I can't believe I can't pull out of this right now. And I'm like, I'm actually like upset. And like, why am I upset? This is the stupidest thing to be upset about.
No, but it's still a real thing, which is that you feel trapped by a game. Like, yeah. I certainly feel trapped by games sometimes, and that can be a spiral.
Right.
You and know, that can spiral for me, certainly.
Yeah, it's just weird to be trapped by a game that you like, mm-hmm. with people that you like.
Yeah, like my experience playing it last night was, because it was a new play, I was so happy to get like a really good teach from Matt so that I was understanding things. And I felt like it was still like a learning game where I was asking questions about like, Jordan, why were you doing this? Just so I can understand what's happening there, that I was still involved enough on other people's turns. I will say though, also like there were times in that game where I had some of my worst AP I've ever experienced in games. And I felt like, oh my God, I'm doing the thing which I sometimes complain about in other people, which is like, I'm at the point where like I just need to make a decision, but I can see like it's that moment from Searching for Bobby Fischer, like don't move until you see it. Like there's parts of my brain saying like there's math in this game, mm-hmm. where it's like this is a solvable solution. Your brain is telling you can do this so that you fulfill both contracts.
Yes,
I know it's there. You just need to look hard enough, and I can combine these five different types of coffee resources and different moves and rewards in order to fulfill both of these contracts.
Build this building.
But it's like I sat there for 5 minutes on one of my turns trying to work that out. And it's like, okay, I just need to do something.
Right.
And then it happened and the game progressed. And then that's when I had kind of like my mini explosion where I'm like, oh, wait a second. I can buy coffee beans with money.
Me too. And I forgot about that too.
We completely forgot about this one rule. It's like, oh, I could totally have done this thing. Right. But I was also like, I think we had already discussed, like, I was aware that you were not having necessarily the greatest time playing the game. And here I was like doing the thing that I sometimes complain about in other players. It was like, you just need to make a move.
Right.
But
I hope we called it at midnight after two rounds. There's a whole other round to
do. Two out of three rounds.
Yeah. I hope that one of the reasons why we called it was not because of me. That would make me feel really upset.
Not
upset, but I would be like,
no, the decision to play Coffee Traders was actually kind of poor, considering that I think Matt internally had a personal out of around midnight.
Well, yeah, I think that, well, I don't think that anyone, I don't think anyone anticipated that those rounds would take as long as they did. It took a really long time. But I mean, that's the thing, you forget sometimes with games. Like we played Lorenzo recently, and we were like, oh yeah, this is a good 2.5 hour game, and we spent almost 4 hours on it. And then when it was over, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot this game is like 4 hours. Every time I played it, it's been 4 hours. Sometimes you just forget.
That did seem like the longest play I've ever had.
We were playing a particular
expansion. But do you want to shift to that, or do you have some more thoughts on Coffee Traders? Or?
I do want to say that, like, yes, I went through an emotional journey, mm-hmm. Sort of in a weird way, I like that, because I do find that one of the interesting parts of game night and being in a game group is how often I wind up thinking about how I process group dynamics and emotions and choice and feeling heard and not heard. And it kind of like is all my psychological damage. Like, it really is amazing how it can come to the fore. And I, you know, and you know, I can't, where I struggle is, I go on to Candace's podcast on BGG and talk about 18XX, and we're going to come back to this probably later. And I say, listen, you feel like you're out early, but like, you know, you should just be viewing 18XX as like a larger entertainment that you're part of. And so when things are sucking for you, you know, step out of yourself. It's like, how do I go on to that podcast and preach that?
Did not live it at all.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But, I was going to say something else about Coffee Traders, but I've forgotten what it was. It still is a really good game. It's a game.
I can see what people love about it. I was fully engaged.
Yeah.
I don't think I was going to win, but I was having a great time.
It was. And I have to say, there was actually something really fun and easy about the night, where it was just five people. You know, at one point there was some fast food, there was beers going around. What I really enjoyed about last night was I did not feel trapped socially. I felt like this was actually such a lovely way to spend a Friday night. Like, it had a different vibe than like a capital G game night. It felt kind of just like just hanging out with some beers and some French fries and onion rings and playing a game. And I really loved that.
Yeah, but it's a little more intimate.
Yeah.
Like, they're all people that we've known for years now. It was like the right people for the right weight of game. We just needed another hour.
Yeah.
And we needed the Hollywood Bowl not to start everything out.
Well, late. I needed to also just like get out of my own head and not like be a ridiculous person. But, you know, that's part of gaming sometimes.
Oh, you know, one final note on that. Matt pointed out Coffee Traders has actually completely rewritten its rule book from the original release.
Which is good.
I think the criticism was like this original rule book was terrible. And they pointed out that Capstone has actually done a completely new rule book that they offer for like $5 or something like that. Basically, like the cost of their shipping to get a new rule book. So if people have that sitting on their shelf or they want to explore it, know that there is a new rule book that is supposed to take care of a lot of the confusion of the initial test. We've still had a few points of going to the rule book and having trouble finding things, but it kind of worked out in the end. There's a lot going on in this game.
And when I first taught the game on TTS, it was from that original rule book, and it was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
It was an actual nightmare. It was very
difficult. But that says something about Capstone, that's what they'd like to do. You know, that
I appreciate
let's go and fix this.
Yep.
For our long-term
Did you
catalog and for our customers. I think that shows a lot of commitment to the games and to the designers.
Did you see that Capstone is like partnering with Cranio Creations to release their games?
I did not.
I received that there was a newsletter that went out like a week ago. And so they're going to be working with Cranio. Cranio does like Barrage, Nucleum is coming out. Although that's not.
That's right. I'm not the big Kickstarter guy in the group. But the criticism of Cranio was the bad Barrage Kickstarter, right? Where there was like.
Barrage had such a terrible Kickstarter, but I think it speaks to
how good. And some of it was components and
it was a disaster, but it speaks to the quality of Barrage that like it had a million
Barrage overcame reviews. In time Barrage overcame all of that,
and it's like it really is a masterpiece.
Oh,
what I was going to say, my last point about Coffee Traders was it's interesting that I was having issues with downtime. Again, I wonder if that my issues with downtime was partly because it was not, you know, maybe you feel downtime more when you're in a game, when you're playing a game that you're not wanting to play. I had like, and as I mentioned before, I had this issue with Voidfall too. We talked about it when we talked about Voidfall, we talked about it. And then when I played a second time, I really felt it I felt it so badly on Voidfall the second time that I've decided to step away from Voidfall until Matt and Jordan have explored it more and can sort of come back with like, this
with
is
a recommendation.
Really, this is really the way to play it. But it's weird because I'm not normally affected by downtime. I actually often feel like I'm one causing the downtime. But in these two games, I really sort of back-to-back big games really was impacted by it.
Well, I think it does indicate something about the game when you can settle on your next move and the other player's actions really have very little chance of affecting that.
Exactly.
Like it's the opposite of what we were talking about with Teletum in the last year, where like you could think you know your next move in Teletum, but you know what? The landscape's going to change so much by the time it gets to you, you know, until it gets to you, you don't really know. Whereas I think in this game and certainly in some parts of Voidfall, like you've got your moves queued up. You've got your cards with your actions. I know I'm playing them in this order. So it's pretty easy to be like, okay, I need other people to go because I know what I'm going to do. And I imagine like, again, with some players, then that means that the game should move pretty quickly, right?
Right.
Everybody kind of knows what they're going to do, so do it, you know.
But not everyone does. The last game I played, and I'm not going to harp on this because also I know that like Matt and Jordan are going to be doing a review and they're going to have, I think, a much deeper frame of reference. But my last game of Voidfall, it got so bad I started timing the time in between turns for me.
Right.
And every turn took about 10 to 12 minutes for it to come back to me every single time. And that happens in games. But what would happen is, imagine 10 to 12 minutes, you do like one, like, okay, I'm playing this card. I got my resources. And I got to wait 10 to 12 more minutes. Okay. I just took this technology card. Now I've got to wait 10 more minutes.
I don't think it's small of you at all to be raising this issue. I think that a lot of that is design.
Right.
There's a reason we play so many games with quote unquote mini turns.
Mm-hmm.
is because that time before it gets back to you, like it really is easy to check out. And Voidfall has the, I'm playing a card, I'm going to do it, two or three actions. A lot of times there really is kind of a third thing you can do.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an entire combat that emerges from the thing, and then you add the number of players around you. And yeah, like I'm actually surprised your number's only at 10 or 12 minutes. It could easily be higher.
It could. Or like I mentioned previously about Here I Stand, I had a situation where I waited an hour.
Well, yeah.
And so, but there are other games where there's a huge amount of downtime, and I'm okay with it because I'm running through scenario after scenario. Like if this happens and this, but what about this contingency? And then what about this? Or who, I just got a good, I had this cool idea. What if I explore this? Oh, if I do this, I could do this. And that time vanishes. But these games were not,
I'm trying to remember
not doing that for
me. With Here I Stand, I feel like I warned you.
You did.
And then I heard that you played England, and I was like, oh no, not England.
Oh, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Everyone chose the fact. Everyone was like, chosen
you,
on.
You had the exact same experience I had playing that game. My criticisms are your criticisms. I mean, I came away from that game saying, I will only refer to this game as Here I Wait. And so I can see there's a lot of things that are interesting to explore about that game, but I'm never going to have the patience to step my foot back into that arena after sitting around for an entire Saturday waiting for my inconsequential turn and then rolling a die to see if I have a successor.
Because the roles were distributed over Discord, or like everyone, like, well, it was just like there was one afternoon, it felt like. And I went on to the chat, and everyone had already just chosen their roles. And so I just was, by default, the only one left was England. So I was like, okay, I'll be England. It's kind of fun.
Okay, so babies. A pattern is emerging here, Ben.
Well, no, that one, I'm missing the boat. That one I missed the boat on. But I didn't, but to be fair, I didn't, like, I was like, okay, well, I don't have any choice, but maybe this is good because I don't really know. If you'd warned me against England, I had forgotten.
Okay.
And so I just was like, sure. I'll be England. It'll be kind of fun, and I'll have babies, you know,
or not.
I had a baby.
Okay, good.
I had a weak baby, an unhealthy baby, who then became healthy. So let's move on. Let's move on. I played recently last weekend. I went up to Big Bear, which is like a mountain destination in California here by Los Angeles. My friends and I, we rented a very small cabin, and we didn't get to play too many games at all, but the one game that we played was Voodoo Prince by Reiner Knizia.
Sure.
Which is a game that Matt introduced us to. It's a trick-taking game.
Part of our trick-taking.
It was in the big trick-taking summer. Mm-hmm. So it's a trick-taking game wherein once you've won three hands, you are now out for the round. And you get points based off of how many hands other people have won. So, for instance, if you're playing with four other people and those other four people have collectively won about like four tricks, then you get 4 points. So the longer you stay in the game.
Without being last, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. Whoever is the last person standing only gets points for how many tricks they personally have won, which will be either 1 or 2 points or 0, technically. But but if you are in, the longer you stay in the round, the more points you'll get.
So there's a balancing act. Yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously the more the round goes on, the more tricks are won. So when you go out, you'll get more points. And, so we played and it goes over several rounds, and I have to say it was a wonderful experience because there were five of us, and I felt like the first round people were like, oh, okay, this is cool. But with each following round, people got more and more into it. And then by the end, the final round, I was tied or like 1 point ahead of someone. And then my friend Nate, who had been all the way in the back, had now come roaring back into a very like competitive, but kind of like far reaching third place, but he was also tied with someone else. And then there was someone else who was in the middle, and the whole game was like, it was like a live game. And so it looked like my friend Neil and I were going to like, it looked like the two of us were in contention to win. I was like, who of the two of us is going to win? But then both of us went really out early in that final round. So then the people who were in the back of the pack had like a legitimate chance to win. And it had all like the drama that right. you really want from really any game. And I have to say it was an amazing amount of fun. And I really hope this game gets a US release because it's a really great trick taker.
Oh, I didn't know it wasn't. I think it's
Japan only.
For Reiner Knizia.
Yeah, or maybe it was originally a US game at some point and went out of print. But yeah. It was really great to see my friends who were like not necessarily as into games get like swept up in the drama of this little card game.
Yeah, I'm happy for the summer of trick taking to be over. Mm-hmm. Like we played a lot of stuff and that was fun to kind of try a bunch of different things. I've had a lot of pleasure playing trick takers at different stages of my life. And to me, a lot of the pleasure is in the repetition and like really getting underneath the skin of a game. And yeah. So I can totally see like even in the course of a single game, like Voodoo Prince was clicking for people. And yeah. Like that is a pretty elegant game, like straightforward, not a lot, you know, not a tough teach. You kind of learn by playing it. And then it sounds like it really stuck the ending.
It really did. Like one of the reasons why of all the trick taking games we played over the summer, I only wound up buying three, which is sort of funny. It's three games, but it's still, I felt like there were so many, but a lot of them I felt like were interesting experiences, but like played them and like out of sight, out of mind. But this one and RoboTrix and Schadenfreude were the ones that I procured. And this one was just, I loved how it felt almost inconsequential at first in this session. Like after round one, I think I had 11 points maybe. I had 10 or 11 points. My friend Nate had 1 point or something like that. Right. And then after round two, I still learning had a pretty game, strong game. Lead. I just felt like it was a fun experience. But then all of a sudden when it started to feel like an actual competition, it felt like everyone was in it. And we also did a thing where at the moment that you were out of a round, we all just like did a golf clap. And we really, that really kind of like made it fun too in a strange way. Sure. I highly recommend people do a golf clap in this game.
LARP it, yes.
LARP it.
LARP Voodoo Prince.
What about you? What other games have you been playing lately?
Well, so I've played a lot more Great Western Trail in New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe I'm going to move my review down just a little bit. Just okay. Because my experience has been, I've been struggling to play the game differently. I think everybody kind of has played it and it's like, well, if you play like, you know, the standard Great Western Trail cowboy strategy, like you can come into New Zealand and play that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and I've won a couple games doing that. And so now I'm zagging where I'm trying to play other strategies and I'm failing and losing to people that are doing the thing, which I did. So my sample size is still small. It's slightly larger, but you know, kind of like struggling to make a builder strategy work, struggling to make a captain strategy work. And so there's some frustration there where like I'm going to continue to play it. I think a lot of people are going to continue to play it, but some of the potential that seemed to be there the first time I played it, I have not been able to kind of really realize it yet. And so that's been a frustration.
Yeah.
Did we want to talk about, we had a game of Lorenzo.
Oh, yeah.
What, about a month ago? And I think this is appropriate. A little bit of our direct aggression is that we played a game of Lorenzo, but we also played it with a particular expansion.
The Potsy.
That's right.
Expansion.
I don't think it introduced some cards which affect other players.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call this like targeted aggression because typically like a negative thing happens and it affects all the other players generally.
Right.
But then the effects can be kind of localized in that suddenly like you had like Tom was playing some card and like everybody had to pay two money
Tom
to
had
Tom.
This awful card.
Or something like that. And at that moment, like I could afford it, you know, the player could afford it and you couldn't and it wrecked you.
It wrecked me. I was so mad just because, you know, you work so hard, you scrap, you do everything just to get the meager resources you can to do this thing. And I had already chosen a hard path for myself in that game.
Right.
And And it did. It really set me back around. And I was able to rebound and come back and figure stuff out. And like my game was not ruined, but I definitely was like 50 points behind everyone by the end, you know?
It felt bad.
But at that moment, it felt bad.
Yeah.
It felt bad and it didn't feel targeted. It did not have a feeling like Tom was picking on me.
No.
I just was like, this is just like...
It was just so obnoxious.
Why the hell would the game do this to me?
Right. You know? Yeah, I think this expansion, I think the nicest... Well, not even nice. In no way did this expansion improve the game.
It actually hurt the game.
Did it hurt the game? Yes, it did. Do not play with this expansion. I think it's kind of like a fundamental misunderstanding of the appeal of Lorenzo.
Yeah.
And I can see, like, I went and looked at this at BGG. Like, not many people have it. Not many people have played it. I think it should just be viewed as one of those dumb, weird expansions that everyone ignores.
It could have actually made me like the entire game less. I made a joke.
Right.
I said, well, I'm just never going to play this game again. And people kind of like looked at me. I think Tom looked at me like, really? And I think he almost felt guilty. But I was like, no, I'm just joking. Because I've said that before in games. But like, it could happen to someone where they say, oh, this has sort of like ruined the joy of this game for me. I don't think I need to play Lorenzo ever again. So I would tell people to never play with this expansion.
I think it doesn't understand the appeal of the base game, which I think is like, it's a top 20 game for our group.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
But like it's a shitty, shitty expansion. Like I would never play it. It's just mean.
Yeah. Maybe that's a little bit of why we were headed towards, like, this isn't exactly direct aggression, but it is like, I think they were thinking this will make the game more interactive. We're addressing the criticism of that Lorenzo's not interactive enough by having these negative effects, you know,
Designers do this, I feel like, from time to time. I feel like they say, oh, we need to have more interaction. So let's just like add, like, it's like basically saying, like, let's just like throw a pickpocket into the game. Like, hey, are you enjoying this tourist attraction? Do you want to make it feel more exciting? Okay, now there's a pickpocket hanging around. Now you got to look after the pickpocket. It's like, well, that's not more exciting. It's now I have this annoyance that I have to like be wary of. That's not making this more thrilling for me. I mean, I don't know who says that they want a tourist attraction to be more exciting. It's a weird analogy, but it's just like, it was just, to me, it actually felt lazy. It felt like a lazy way of addressing an interaction issue. If there's an issue where people don't feel like they're interacting much, build in a trading element, build in a negotiation. I mean, Terraforming Mars, to its credit, attempted this with one of its expansions where it added like that Demacher kind of government thing where there was elements of government. And I don't remember really loving that expansion, but at least it was an attempt to create interaction that was not just
games kind of like exploring the space and then the community kind of gets to curate it after the fact. Like, not all the Terraforming Mars expansions are great, but Prelude's great.
Yeah.
Like, Prelude is the way to play the game.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's an actual improvement. And then I think some of the others are like, if you're in the mood for this, if you're in the mood for that, it's nice to have different maps.
Yeah.
You know, some of the maps actually are much better than the base map as far as like the milestones end up being like more competitive. But I think like what happened with us, Lorenzo, the end of that, I think we all agreed, take that expansion, set it aside, maybe even sell it because it's making the table.
Burn it. Pretend it never existed. I recently played actually a very take that game. I went to Candace's house and we played Sons of Anarchy, the board game.
I saw that on your list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sons of Anarchy, the board game, which came out and this is the actual title. Sons of Anarchy, Men of Mayhem. Sorry, it's not called the board game. It's Men of Mayhem. It's from 2014, designed by Aaron Dill, John Kowalski, and Sean Swigart. I don't know if one of those guys is the creator of the actual show. I don't know. But I went over because Candace's boyfriend, Matt, has been wanting to play this game for years upon years upon years. And
is he a Sons of Anarchy fan?
Yes.
Okay.
And he finally put his foot down and said, Candace, we are playing this game.
Mm.
So she said, Ben, hey, just a heads up, we're going to play Sons of Anarchy.
I need you.
So I was like, okay. I was like, you know what? It's fine. We'll go. And I have to say, it was really fun.
Okay.
It was a really fun game. It's all take that. It basically, you have your motorcycle gang and you have all these locations and you go to the locations and you're doing things like, you are buying guns or you're selling guns to get, white duffel bags full of who knows what drugs. Cocaine. Just called contraband. And then, go from location to location. And if someone's in a location that you want to be in, you go in there and you start a fight with them. And if you pull out your guns, you get more power, but you also draw the attention of the police. And if you draw too much attention from the police, that's going to impact your ability to sell your drugs for more money. And in fact, if you have too much police presence, you can't sell any of your drugs. And then if you have even too much police presence, one of your motorcycle members has to go to jail. They have to take the fall. And then there's, you know, you have these brawls and your people can wind up in the hospital. And then are they going to survive the hospital? Well, you can do something to ensure that they survive, or you can leave it up to a die roll. And you're just going from place to place. And at the end of every round, there's a phase where you sell your drugs. And if only like 4 bags of contraband max are sold, they're all worth like $3 a pop. But if between 4 and or between 5 and 9 are sold, they're all worth $2. And if there's so like the more that are sold, the less they are worth. So it's like this blind bid moment. It's all kind of just goofy fun. And it worked. It's 100% take that. It's right. All
the you last, know what you're getting into.
We played some rules wrong, which is fine. But like the last round was us just getting in each other's way. Like, I want to go there. No, I want to go there. Well, I want to go here. No, I'm going to go there now. And we were just messing with each other, and it worked. It worked. It was a fun game. And on top of that, I've never seen Sons of Anarchy.
Oh,
it made me want to watch the show. Actually,
okay.
All the locations had sort of there were assets from the show and the game. And I also thought it was really fun to play with an adult theme. I thought it was fun to be, you know, like, you know, I'm not into gun culture, so right. Like the guns didn't do anything for me, but it was fun to step into the world of criminals and like drugs and selling drugs and avoiding the cops. Like that was actually very fun for me. And it gave me that feeling of when Grand Theft Auto came out on the video game scene. It's like, oh, we're playing a game where we're running from the cops and running people over their car, like being an anti-hero. It was fun. Worked.
I had a similar thing one time where I showed up in kind of like a game group that I didn't normally go to, but like maybe like a couple times a year. And I walked in and they already had like Spartacus Blood and Sand set up. And I was like, oh no, oh no. But then I got over myself, sat down and played a damn gladiator game. Rolled a bunch of dice.
Yeah.
And got over myself and had a nice time.
Yeah.
You know, like it was a similar thing. It's like, yeah, it is what it is. Embrace it. Hand me the pretzels. You know, right. Let's go. You know?
And I think, I don't know. It's interesting how, like with Coffee Traders, I wasn't able to do that. But with well, with Sons of Anarchy, kind of I was. Because right. I was like, I didn't want to play Sons of Anarchy. But I was like, okay.
I tell you, another game I played recently that has improved in my if Great Western Trail New Zealand has maybe been docked down a little bit. I had one play of Thunder Road Vendetta about a month ago.
I saw that
one is sticking with me. Like
people are liking it.
I think it's really good. I think it's like surprisingly good. And it's the kind of game where I wouldn't think I would like it because it has dice. But again, like I think the use of dice is totally appropriate in this game. And we had a lot of awesome kind of like fist pounding on the table.
You guys were at the other table. I was playing the rich and the good at the other side.
Yeah. And so you got to hear that like the emotions were running high and there was a lot of laughter. There's moments where you're going and jumping over other cars and crashing. And there's lots of chaos and dice rolling, but it was awesome. Like it, I wouldn't think it was my kind of game, but for the right mentality, the right group, like I think that's a really good game.
I think actually also doing racing games are really, really difficult. When I'm talking about racing games, like actual, like depicting a race, not just a game like Catan, where it's like a race. Like when you're depicting a race, it's hard because, you know, everyone, like when you watch any sporting event, you want a good race. And like if you watch anything, you want something that's neck and neck and exciting and comes right down to it. And not all races in life are like that. And with board games, it kind of matches. Sometimes we play a racing game and a board game and it's not close. And we're much less tolerant of runaway leaders, no pun intended, in race games and board games in general. And so if you have a race game that doesn't provide an exciting finish every single time or an exciting journey, then I think people dismiss them. And I don't understand. I don't think that's a bad thing. I get that because I do it too. Like I want my racing games. I want my, when I play a game that has racing, I want the excitement to match real life. And by the way, I had some people over and we played Ready, Set, Bet. It was, there were six of us. We played Ready, Set, Bet. And the amount of screaming, and that's interesting because we're not racing, but we care about a race.
We're betting on.
And the amount of screaming, the final race of the night, we almost called, we're like, let's do one more. And that final race was so tight. And like, I love those exciting moments, but I really want to play Thunder Road because it sounds like it taps into that excitement we want from a race, right?
Yeah, and it has some things in it which are kind of like almost like Mario Kart-ish.
Yeah.
Which is like, you can't just have a runaway leader. You have tools for dealing with runaway leader. You're not just controlling one car, you're controlling three cars and a helicopter too. So like you lose cars. When you lose cars, like your remaining cars actually have like more assets now. So there's like that going for it too that kind of keeps you in it. But in the end, like the main criticism was, I think that Tom ended up winning based upon turn order. At the same time, like the journey, no pun intended, was the game.
Right.
Like Tom won. Everybody had a great time. Didn't matter. It was a smash up all along the way. And so who won at the end? I said not winning.
Right.
Did not really matter.
I feel like I would like it just because I own the game Automobiles, which not automobile, but
right.
Automobiles, which is like a NASCAR themed, unofficially themed game. It's a bag builder. And so I think it's really, really fun. And
is that David Short? Is that AEG that I'm thinking
of? It's AEG. It's whoever did Trains.
Yeah, I think that's David Short.
Okay. It's super fun. Like, it's a really great racing game. I actually almost brought it last night and I didn't. But it's just right there.
We double check so we don't get the design.
Yeah, go pull it. It's a bag builder, and it's a really fun bag builder. You know, the color of the cube. Okay.
David Short, AEG.
But, like, I've played it before. Like, one of the things that's really fun about it is that you will have a turn where you will go just, like, flying around the track. And then the next turn, you pull all your crappy cubes, and you go, like, two spots. And, like, some people hate that.
Right.
But I often find that to be like really funny. Like, oh my God, my car's not going. What happened? I'm stalling out, you know? So, I've always enjoyed that one, but it sounds like Thunder Road Vendetta takes the chaos of that game and just like amps it up and makes
it knows what it is.
Even sillier. Yeah.
And I had a great time again, kind of like despite myself.
Yeah.
You know, in some situations that's going to be the perfect game. So, like, maybe the final things to mention of, like, things that I've played recently, just because it transitions into our topic today, is I had a great five-player game of Terraforming Mars last week.
So jealous. I've been wanting to play that again lately.
What a classic. And then I got into play of Voidfall. And it was a curated three-player game with B-Matt and Tom, where I think Matt already had a number of plays. And I think was almost like addressing some of the concerns from the review, from not the, you guys didn't review, but from the podcast of like, when does the interaction really start to take place? Because like, you're kind of playing a engine builder, you know, Euro style game for a while in that until you come into contact with other players. And so I think each of those scenarios in Voidfall has, you know, there's a number of scenarios, but they have a level of interactivity or level of aggression.
Yeah.
And I think what that all that is how quickly do you come into contact with other players so that attacking one another becomes the game. And so I think he's trying to figure out like, well what's going to be the thing that we actually want to play here? Is the high aggression game, is that actually the point? Or because I think the learning game is kind of low aggression, which is that you get to play a lot of your game essentially playing against just the board itself until you come into contact at the very end and you can kind of make your moves at the end with Voidfall. And it just got me to think about this question of like we started coming into contact with each other at the halfway through the second era. Like there's three eras in Voidfall or whatever you correctly call it.
Three.
I think a lot of games you won't actually encounter other players and really fight them until the third era. That was happening with us in the second because it was a high aggression game. And so it was my first time playing. There's a lot going on in Voidfall. But I kind of got to that point and I was thinking, we're now in the position where there's three of us. We're kind of on right on top of each other. I feel like Matt's going to attack me at any time. If he does this, then I'm going to attack him back here. And does this mean that Tom wins? You know, like there's the whole, like there's the game set up to give you rewards for attacking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not simply like if you get attacked, you get knocked out. You know, like some of these other games, like they're how they incentivize it, which is, I'm blanking on the game we played that this is kind of similar to recently. That's the Euro Forex game.
Eclipse
kind of does a similar thing though. Like when you attack, you get victory points for attacking it. And in fact, in Voidfall, you get victory points and you sum up all your other victory points at the same time. So like you clearly are supposed to attack each other. This is like some of the easiest and best
but you can also
points
attack
in the game.
The NPCs.
That's right. That's right. And I think mentally, I just kind of got to that point in the game where I thought, I'm not sure I really want to play this kind of game anymore. Mm. Where it's like, okay, I'm now trying to decide, who do I attack? Am I going to get attacked first? How do I respond? I've built my engine.
Right. Well, because you're also attacking for the sake of attacking.
If I want points to win the game.
If you want points, you have to attack. Like, you know, I have to bring up Twilight Imperium. I'm only bringing it up because it's such a huge game in this hobby and it's a big game. And I'm not bringing it up because we have this jokey rivalry with like me and Tom. It's not that. It's because it's such a big game and I really enjoy it. But I think in that game, you often are attacking usually because you need to be somewhere. You need to be on a planet or in Forbidden Stars, you're attacking because you need to get through someone to get your little objective, or maybe you need to attack someone so that way they don't get their objective. But
it's not just to get a bunch of points, I want to get a token
and add it onto my tableau. So when that happens, it really is a game. Those moments are just like aggression just for aggression's sake.
Well, I think that's why I suggested that maybe we talk about directed aggression, because like I love Terraforming Mars quite a bit. That said, I'm still not convinced that game needs the cards that hurt other players.
It doesn't need them.
It's there.
Yeah.
And so they don't
bother me, but they're just like an annoying moment that just sort of stops the flow all of a sudden.
They do bother me. I think and I've played a lot of games now, so I can kind of understand that like asteroids have to exist in the game to counteract certain strategies. Like there's corporations like Ecoline that are going to produce tons of plants. There's others that produce tons of animals, and there's a lot of points in that stuff. The asteroids are a way for people to kind of push back against those strategies because they can attack a specific player and like ruin their plants or whatever. It's not, doesn't end their game, but it can set them back. It's like, okay, so is this a balanced thing to deal with certain factions? In our particular game, a couple weeks ago, I think both Mike and I had a card that was, in order to play this card, you had to reduce another person's steel production. They had to have steel production, but in order to play it, you've got to reduce somebody else's steel production. Here's Chris Bussey, you know, a friend who's still doesn't have like double digit plays at Tom's yet or whatever. But like, in order for us to play the cards we want to play, both times we ended up dinging essentially like the new guy.
Right.
Where at the beginning of the game, he's trying to get his engine going, and we've, you know, punched him below the belt twice.
And steel production is like that's not just like taking out plants. Like steel production, you don't get many opportunities to boost those.
We've crippled his engine, on turn one and two, or whatever it was. And like, there's times where directed aggression in Terraforming Mars is something like Tom's winning. Or Trey's winning.
Yeah,
we need to be hitting this leader with these bashy cards if the rest of us are going to have a chance. Like that, sometimes that's the space of the game. In this case, it was just, well, I want to play my card, which gives me a steel production.
Someone's got to take a hit.
And you know, it ended up being that Mike and I actually like made a little arrangement. Like, we both have these cards. Let's not hit each other. And so we could victimize a
even
third
better,
person.
Even better. like for the victim, you're like, oh, great. There's a coalition and the coalition is against me.
Yeah. And that just kind of sucked.
That sucks.
That sucks.
That we've all been there too. With the
yeah. And so I just like, I'm not like, I think Terraforming Mars is a great game. I also think it could be revised. Those cards could be revised right out. And I wouldn't miss them. But it made me think, like, I still have a some respect in the back of my head of, like, you that I just don't understand this game well enough to know why this directed aggression cards are still in the game. And right. So maybe we should define...
And you know what? By the way, it's not even our obligation to know why they're in the game. It's not our obligation as players.
Right.
It's our obligation to... play the game the way that's best for us, right? And to be like, I think to have like our obligation to emerge from the game with everyone still being friends, I do think is
right.
And so like, but I think that like so if they were designed as a balancing mechanism but they're just being used against people that don't need to be balanced,
that's right,
then that's the game's fault. That's not like, that's, you know, that's,
well, this is kind of the Paul thing sometimes where like Paul respects you when you stab him with the knife and it's intentional and that's like part of your game. When it's just incidental of like, well, somebody's got to get a knife here,
yeah,
randomly it's Chris Bussey, mm-hmm. You know, just works out the way like that, that's definitely a feel bad.
Yeah. So wait, so why don't you, so we're talking about direct aggression
or like what do we even
can
mean
we, I was to say, can you give, can we like, can you come in with some definitions, a tray definition?
So I think let's talk about some things that it's not. I think like directed aggression, the way we're talking about it here involves, I am choosing who is going to take this negative effect. Like, who am mm-hmm. I going to attack?
Right.
If there is not a choice, then we're not really talking about direct aggression. So by definition, a two-player game is not what we're talking about here. You play chess. You're playing against each other. Almost, you know, two-player games are zero sum oftentimes, right? Like, you don't have collective wins. The thing, like, if I'm doing something, I'm attacking you in chess. Of course, this is the game. This is the game we're playing. I'm not like, people have tried to do four-player chess, and it's dumb, right?
It's dumb.
It's really, really dumb. But like, if I'm deciding, am I attacking green or am I attacking yellow? Like, you're in this weird space of who's winning. Is it a horse? You know, horse racing. You know.
But like, I don't know, you can't, I think Twilight Struggle is direct aggression, and that's a two-player game. I think that like there are two-player games like Fields of Arl that are not direct aggression, and I think there are two-player games that are more aggressive.
Well, maybe I'm defining the direct indirect aggression. There are games where you fight each other. I tend to think these are fine. We know what we're playing. The issue is really is like when we're choosing
right.
who we're attacking or who is getting a negative effect. And I think this is why like the Lorenzo expansion that we were talking about, I think they're thinking, okay, we're not doing direct aggression here. Tom is not playing a card and saying, okay, I get to steal 3 coins from a player. I'm going to choose Ben. Like, that's not what happened. What it actually was is I'm doing a thing. It's affecting everyone else evenly. And so I think they're feeling like, oh, this is not direct aggression.
But
because
it is. Because
yeah.
The reason why it is or it can be is because it can be used in that way. Because Tom could see, and I don't know if he did this.
Right.
I don't think he did this. But he could see there are 3 people at this table who have coins and there's 1 person who doesn't have coins. So if I play this card now, it will have a better effect than if I wait a little bit later. And people do that.
Sure.
People do. And in fact, what's that game? There's some game. There are frequently games where people play Concordia. One could even say, I don't think Concordia is direct aggression at all.
Definitely not.
But one could say like the act of doing the production action when someone's supply is full
right.
is like theoretically
that's as close
aggressive.
As you get
to me. I whenever that happens, it's always like a very that's always a funny moment. Like everyone always laughs like you
did produce and I can't
but
get benefit from any of it.
But that's an example how a docile thing can be turned sort of aggressive And in that case, it doesn't really hurt. But like sometimes there are tools that are not explicitly made for direct aggression, but then can be brandished in that way.
Yeah. I think maybe to finish up my point about the two-player thing, yes. Or maybe the difference between like aggression and fighting versus directed aggression is, I think one of the strengths of two-player games, for example, though, is because there's only two people here, when a game is decided, you can stop playing. Like you mm-hmm. can concede in chess.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like you're losing. Yeah. Like we're done here. Moving on. When we're playing multiplayer games, a lot of times, and say you just got smacked all to hell, you are out of the run for the win. There are plenty of games where you're like, you still have plenty of hours.
Yeah.
Left to go, enjoy. And it's now on you to be the good sport. To kind of not ruin other people's games here, even though you don't figure into,
right?
Like you're now like, well, I'm going to explore it, and so next time I'm going to be better, and you're
you have to find that space.
You got to find that space. Whereas in a two-player game, you're like, okay, you won this one, let's play something else. You know, yeah. I think that's one of the advantage of two players is you can just be like, okay, you got it, you won the fight.
That's good point. Interesting.
Moving on. I think one thing, because I was thinking about terraforming Mars and like the example of like asteroids, certain cards that are doing negative effects, and I'm choosing, again, I'm not sure the game needs it, but it made me think we play a lot of games in which there is like blocking
mm-hmm.
on the map. And I think like this is not what we're talking about with directed aggression.
I agree. I think that in fact, if we see blocking, I feel like that is cutthroat. And I think cutthroat is actually different. I think barrage...
Or it's just your position on the map.
But barrage, you know, often gets called a very mean game. And I don't think it's mean at all. I think it's a cutthroat game where if you don't... You have to be mindful at any given time, whatever action you take, you are sacrificing other actions. And you have to be mindful that your decision to take a contract right now or to do this or that means or your decision to build a dam right now, you didn't have the extra coins, you might be building a dam in a suboptimal location. So you have to know there's a chance someone might build a dam that reroutes the water away from you. And that's not directed aggression. But I mean, sometimes the motivation behind that person could be directed aggression. And if you pick up on that energy, that sucks. But the game itself is just cutthroat. You just have to get
And generally, like when someone builds up river of you, like that's to their advantage. Like, right. Yes, it cuts you off, but it also like it strengthens their position. And it's rarely like, okay, I can cut off Tom or I can cut off Ben. It's like it typically doesn't work that way in barrage or something like this. So I can,
right.
Like this is a little direct aggression adjacent, distantly adjacent, but that's
right.
Again, like, I don't think that's really what we're talking about.
I don't think
about.
So either. But what I do want to do is I do want to put a pin in the concept that I was just talking about, okay. That if someone's energy though is aggressive, sure.
How does it feel?
How does it feel? And I'm,
yeah.
But since we're still defining, I'm putting a pin in that because I'm going to bring that back later on because that does impact my feeling towards direct aggression.
So maybe let me do a 30-second history
Take
lesson.
Take as long as you want,
like,
yeah.
Of like the history of directed aggression in board games, according to Trey.
Okay.
I think...
starts with Go.
No, because Go's two-player.
Go's two-player, never mind.
No, I think it's going to start with something like Risk.
Okay.
We've all played Risk. Okay, we have a position here, and you're deciding in our 4 or 5-player game of Risk... Who am I attacking?
I've never played Risk, actually.
You've never played Risk.
I played it on my computer.
It's
solo.
The original troops on a map game. You gather up your forces. You attack another territory. Mm-hmm. You roll dice. It's resolved.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, that game has player elimination. And you start to knock people out. You get more cards, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There will be only one at the end who wins. But a lot of times you're deciding, who am I going to attack? So this is, like, the beginning of the troops on the map. We're going to have a big battle. And there's gonna you will actually play to a single victor in that. So that's 1959. You also wow. have starting in 1959 Diplomacy. Now Diplomacy is a 7-player World War I war game that has no dice whatsoever. You submit orders and so secret orders, and so everything is actually based upon your negotiations. You have at the beginning of the game, you only have like 3 different units. You write orders for them, so everything is about the talking you did with other people. But this is directed aggression because you're deciding who am I going against, who mm-hmm. am I friend, who am I going to be friends with for now, who am I attacking for now. That stuff's always open, but there's big betrayals, whatever. But I am, as Turkey, I am deciding, am I attacking Russia? Am I attacking Austria-Hungary? Am I attacking Italy? Which of them am I allying with? Hopefully they're not all allying against me. But like this is, again, troops on a map in tradition. Like, it doesn't have the dice chucking aspect of it, but it is the troops on the map, and I'm constantly deciding who am I attacking here. And that's going to play out again to, like, theoretically a single victor. Victor in them. So this is all like 1959.
Right.
Then I feel like we can jump ahead a couple of decades here to civilization, Western empires, which you've now placed, which is at least then there's kind of like left-right binding, which is you're playing around the Mediterranean. So typically you can't just attack anyone, but you tend to have someone to your left, someone to your right, and then later on in the game, maybe like someone across the water type of thing. So you're making decisions about like which way you're going to go. And then like another game that I actually didn't play that much, but it's still pretty big in the hobby space, is something like Axis and Allies, where you've got a number of players and you're moving troops and rolling dice. So like, there's this, a lot of the hobby is made up of these games.
And I of course have to mention the very first 18XX game was like 1974. So that's also has like, that's aggressive and that has somewhat.
But those are like land grabs, right? Again, that's like blocking and positional.
The dumping of companies, I think, is where people.
Oh yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, but that's a, it's actually kind of a different direction. But it's a game. Either way, it's a game that it's a genre that people often will say is a mean genre, even though I don't necessarily believe that. But you know, it is a game with feel bad moments for people.
Sure, and so I bring these up because what I would say is like, I didn't play a lot of Axis and Allies, but like I played a ton of Risk. I played a lot of Civilization when I was younger. I played a lot of Diplomacy, and I really enjoyed those games. I'm not sure I want to play them anymore. Like these are games that are not making the table now. And I think that's kind of like the point I got to with Voidfall is like, I'm just not sure I want to play this game anymore. I think Voidfall is probably a really excellent game for people that want to play that game now, that want to play the directed Geshen. We're all going to battle it out. I'm going to get a lead. Then we're going to gang up on that guy, you know, and we'll see how it all turns out in the end.
I mean, the irony is for me, my experience with Voidfall was that I actually wanted more direct aggression because
scenario.
I played two scenarios that were at aggression four. Maybe it was aggression three. I did aggression three, aggression four, and then those are the two I did. And I wanted actually more clashing, just so that way I had more decisions. If that makes sense, like I didn't want to fight, but I also felt like the experience actually needed the threat, and I needed a sense of danger in my game, and I was not getting a huge amount of danger, you know, which is sort of a paradoxical thing. It's like, I don't want this thing, but I feel like the game overall actually needs it. But I haven't played the level five aggression, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think we were playing and I was feeling like, oh, I'm about to get wrecked. Like, can I survive? Like, I have enough production where, like, I think the way it had worked out, like, Matt and Tom had slightly better ships, but I can produce tons of them. So it'll be a kind of thing where, like, I get hit, but then I can kind of bounce back quickly. And we didn't get a chance to really see how that played out.
But either way, your point about that you are just not interested in playing these games with direct aggression.
I don't think so.
Well, the thing is, a lot of times players that don't want to play games with direct aggression are like, the term is like, they're Care Bear players, which I actually really don't like that. No, I don't like that because I feel like it's actually feels like oddly condescending, you know, like, and someone could say, no, I love the Care Bears, but it's sort of saying like, if you don't like playing a game with direct aggression, you are kind of wimpy. And you can't deal with tough moments. And that's kind of bullshit. You know, I think it's totally fine to say, I want to have, when I'm having my fun, I don't want to have moments that make me feel bad.
Yeah.
I think that's like a
right. I don't want to play a game in which I victimize a friend in the course of playing. Now, I say this with no disrespect to people that want to play these games. I used to be that person. I just don't think I'm that person anymore. I think like Voidfall will be a great game for them. But let me bring one other like modern example here. I love Through the Ages. I think Through the Ages is a great game. I also do not want to play it with human beings. Like I've probably have close to 1,000 plays on Mac, on Apple iOS. Like, it's my great, you know, against three AIs. I love it. But we played a decent number of games during the pandemic and right before the pandemic on it. And I stopped wanting to play it because the nature of that game is you have both wars and aggressions, which are zero-sum attacks. They're different kinds of attacks. But basically, if I win this fight, I'm gaining something and it is at your expense.
Right.
Like, I'm stealing, whether I'm stealing, you know, resources from you or technologies from you. Like, that can be the result of an aggression or a colony from you or a war. I'm stealing technology or population or even points. And what we found, we have a term for this now from through the ages, is like the wildebeest effect.
Yeah.
Which is like, it is possible that you go into a negative spiral in that game where you can no longer defend yourself and everyone is chewing on your corpse.
Yeah.
You know, everyone views you as a resource to be mined for their game. And emotionally, like, and that can happen. That can happen like less than the third of the way through. You're in this wildebeest death spiral. And like, I just don't want to do that to my friends.
And I don't want it to be done to me because, you know, I have the app too, and I played it a bunch, and I was like, yeah, this game is so fun. And then we played it during the pandemic, and I just, I was the wildebeest, and it was like deeply unpleasant. It was so unpleasant because it's not just like, there are games where you fall behind. I'm like, well, I'm behind, but let's see what I can do.
This is a whole nother level, right?
But this is more like, oh, I'm behind, let's see what I can do. Oh, the thing I was going to try to do just got ruined because I just got kicked. Okay, well, let me do this. Oh, I just got kicked again.
I could fix this if I had resources, but my resources just got taken.
I'm sure there are people who would say, well, you're just playing it wrong. If in those situations, you do this or that or whatever. Nope. I don't care because I'm playing. It doesn't matter how I'm playing it in that moment. I'm just like, I'm having it sucks. It's not so much about that I'm losing. It's that I'm okay with losing. I'm just trying to actually just do something fun for myself. And now I have to fend off these attacks. And it's just like, okay, now I'm on autopilot. You know, I don't like those experiences at all.
That's right.
But I don't think I'm done playing games with direct aggression.
Sure.
I think that I don't like playing games with bad direct aggression. I don't like.
So what's that line? What distinction are you making there? Because I'm not sure that Voidfall has bad directed aggression. No,
what I don't like is a game that makes you feel like you are doing something kind of Euro-y. You're building an engine. You're building something fun and lovely, a machine, and then someone out of nowhere can just come and just knock it down. And if you create the emotional parameter that this is a game of attacking, I'm okay with that. That's why I'm okay with Twilight Imperium, because it's like you are building your little sandcastle because you're building up your fleet of ships, but those are in service of going and attacking. And like, it's tonally part of the game in a way that's really consistent. Same with Sons of Anarchy. It is tonally like, this is what this game is about, and don't have any illusions that you can just sit in your corner and just make something nice and pretty.
Right, can't just turtle and win.
Right. So I think it's about having tonal consistency. I think that like to if you're playing a game with direct aggression, you are really playing with people's emotions. And when you play with people's emotions, you have to be mindful of that.
Right.
And when a game can be mindful of that, that's going to be a success. That's why to me, a Sons of Anarchy can win, because Sons of Anarchy says, yes, this is going to be attacky, but this is also, it's all in the pursuit of fun, and everyone's attacking everyone. Survive, Escape Atlantis has been around since like 1981 or 82.
And that's
like,
fun.
That's a pure aggression game. That is just like, who gets to come in my rowboat? Because this, hey, this island is sinking. I can only take two people in my rowboat. Okay, so I've got to leave someone behind to get eaten by a shark. And then you're like literally deciding the lives of people's meeples.
Yeah.
So like the game is saying, have fun with this. Hey, I know this might be upsetting, but this is all fun. And that's sort of like taking care of how you feel. But when a game is just sort of like, oh yeah, that can happen. Sorry. Like sometimes games sort of create that tone, and that feels terrible.
So a couple of thoughts here. Like, one is, I think I'm much more open to this stuff when it's short, right? Because like, if it's like, this aggression happens, the game's short, we're done, or we can play again, whatever. Like, I find that all much more acceptable, which is why, like, it seems to me like a miracle that Twilight Imperium can work, because that's an all-day affair.
Right.
Maybe it's kind of what you're saying. It's like, you're not really fighting people just to fight people per se. It's that people are often in the way of your objectives. I don't understand the game well enough to weigh in on that. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's my fear in playing something like Twilight Imperium, is that I'm going to get stuck.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in there. I'm going to like lose a fight.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be trapped for another 5 hours trying to be the good sport or whatever. So like, it's amazing to me that it does work for a lot of people. It's a top 10 game on BGG. So it works.
It works. I think it does work. People can feel trapped. I once had a friend just get up and leave, but,
that's right.
But like, and there is sometimes where the aggression in that game is like, I'm sorry, I had to attack you because I had a secret objective that said I get a point for doing this, you know?
Okay, learn something about you, yes.
No, I'm saying like those things happen. But usually when that happens, like, sorry, this is why I had to do that. Mm-hmm. And then usually people are like, oh, okay, because we all understand.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's like, it's so, like, you have to do that, you know? But I feel like a lot of times I become sensitive to direct aggression in games. If the element of fun is not attached to it, it's hard for me. Like if someone, like Paul and I talk about this a lot, you know, Paul will often make very aggressive moves, but he does it in a way that's like really fun. He's like usually laughing, but or he'll be like, I'm sorry, I gotta do this to you. Or he'll say, look. Well, I'm looking at this. I think I got to go after you or something like that. And like, you're like, okay, you know, and it's like jokey and there's an attack. But I think Paul is really good that if he's going to attack someone and he can see that it's going to actually like ruin their mood and make them upset, he will pull back.
Yeah.
And like there's
joke that he feeds off that energy, but it's not true.
He's actually very, very, very. He really cares about people's energy. And I think there's some people who don't. I think there are some people who are like, I need to win. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, I'm sorry, I have to do this, dude, but I have to win. And you sort of just want to be like,
ew. Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. Well, okay. Along those lines, I think like a distinction I used to make, and I don't think this is a complimentary thing, the way I used to think about this at all. I think this is actually kind of wrong. But like, diplomacy has a reputation as being kind of like a friend destroying game. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly had those moments where like playing with friends in high school and you get backstabbed and you feels awful and you're mad and you feel like, oh, I can never trust this person. This person's a liar. And they lied to you, or you were the liar. And they go, learn something about Trey. And I think we got to a point, it's like, okay, we don't want to play this with friends. This is hurting friendships. But I was okay going to conventions and playing diplomacy against random people. Mm-hmm. And like somehow that made it okay because I was not hurting my friends when I did this. And also like there's the mentality of like, everyone knows what they're getting into. We're playing diplomacy.
Yeah.
We're going to get betrayed.
Yeah.
But I think like there's certain games where like I might play a Through the Ages tournament because everybody knows what they're getting into. And like I could play it now where like I could be the wildebeest and I could take it because I understand the game really well and I just kind of understand.
You can see the comedy in it maybe.
And I know like that's how it goes. And like it's necessary. Like those things are in the game for a very good reason. You cannot cut them out. They are a critical part of the balance and it's one of the things that makes the game really rich. And so like I'm still tempted to be like, I could play this game as a tournament where everyone really knows what they're getting into, but I don't want to play it with friends. But I question whether this distinction I'm making of like, why is it okay for me to go and betray someone playing diplomacy at a convention, which Tom and I used to do here at local conventions, versus, but I won't play that with my friends. Like that seems like, okay, that's probably not okay. If you're not willing to do it to your friends, but you're willing to do it to strangers, probably not a great moral
and yet we
ground
play,
to stand on.
We play Avalon every week. And Avalon, we are literally deceiving people. But it works. No one it's very rare that people emerge from that with hurt feelings. It can happen, but like there is a sense that like, you know, you are setting people up, you're attacking people, but it's all a guise. Because first of all, well, I would say it's short, but sometimes we've played recently some games that went 2 hours.
2 hour? Wow, really?
We had a 2 hour game recently. It was never ending.
But like, it's long because we're having a good time. Or at least we're having a good time.
And we're trying to figure something out. There's like a mystery.
Yeah,
and
we're not in any hurry for
And there's
it to
actually
end.
The reveal of like who is bad, who is good is very exciting and fun. So like it works. Deception works now kind of because the game has like the game has established a tone and has said like this is what you
and
can
that
do.
Is not a direct aggression game. You're not like the worst thing that you can do in Avalon is just simply not include someone in the teams. Like that's as direct aggression as
you can. It could be direct aggression if like all the bad guys decide to just like go after one person and just like lie about them. It could go that way.
You mean socially they're kind of being aggressive?
You could socially. Like you could, if you wanted to play a really nasty game, you could play a nasty game. You could outright lie about, if you're a bad guy, you could outright lie about someone and say mean things to them. Like you could cross that line, but we don't because.
See, this to me is like, this is in a similar space is the game Werewolf or even something like Battlestar Galactica. In Werewolf, people get killed,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know. That, you know, player elimination, that's a whole different subject. But at least people that are eliminated can go away.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. You can direct aggression. It's like, no, okay, let's knock Ben out. You know, Ben, right. Ben's dead. You know, moving on. Avalon doesn't do that. Everybody's still voting.
Yeah.
Like, in Battlestar Galactica, you can get put in the brig and then... But you know, you can't do anything, and that's not great.
I definitely had a moment though playing Avalon like about like 9 months ago. It hit me in a weird way where I was like, why is it that like just people I can't get people to listen to what I have to say in this game, right. And so I did sort of have a feel bad moment because even though it was a game and even though it was silly, I still was like, you know, I was like making points and no one. Was listening to me. And what does that say about me? Or why don't they listen to me? Like, I kind of felt bad about myself afterwards. But then again, that might be... Feel bad moments are not necessarily...
I think you're great to root this in as, like, the how does it feel?
Yeah.
What is my experience? I think you're right to do that. I know, like, the bad side of the coin of where I think, like, you have a very legitimate criticism is that there are times when our Avalon games become almost like personality contests.
Mm-hmm.
And we really do have a danger of some players dominating the narrative. In fact, we call it that, where we're trying to almost like check somebody saying like, okay, you're talking a lot
right.
here. Let's make a space for other people to kind of get their words in. I can remember some of these moments when you felt frustrated like this. And the context, at least for me, was, well, I know Ben's the spy, so mm-hmm. like, there's reason I'm not listening to him.
Yeah,
like that's a little different. But I, like, when the game actually just becomes a like, fortunately, it doesn't really. It really becomes like a shouting match.
Right.
But there is time where like some people do talk too much. I may be one of them at times, and like that's not great. We should hear from everybody.
I don't think you are, but I think I may be conflating feel bad moments with direct aggression, which is different. I guess I'm just saying a game like that does have the potential for it. Because you are, I mean, you are, if you are lying to someone, that is a direct aggression, but it feels okay because the game is saying this is okay to do. I'm thinking about Cosmic Frog.
I've still never played that. I would
Cosmic
like to.
Frog was all direct aggression.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Super direct aggression. You're bad, like people come and attack you and yada, yada, yada. But I did not enjoy it. I can see it being really fun with a larger player count. I play with three players first and foremost. But there's like this element that as these cosmic frogs, you go on, there's like this shard of land and you go and you collect terrains and you put them on your player board. And like, as you collect terrains, I forget how it works, but as you collect these hexes on your player board, it unlocks powers. And I remember playing and it was like very fun. I was like, oh, cool. I'm like collecting stuff. This is like the strategy I'm doing as I'm doing this. And then I sort of had forgotten or was not being fully aware of the fact that like when I get attacked in a certain sort of way, the opponent could just like take those hexes off my player board.
Right.
And it was stated in the rules. And so I knew that, but like the game was giving me sensations of, oh, I'm building my little engine. And then it said, no.
Someone kicked down your sandcastle.
Someone kicked down your sandcastle. And like, there was almost a feeling of like, oh, and you knew that could happen. So why are you upset right now? You should have been defending. You should. And so like, I know, okay.
This is your fault.
Yeah. Like I was like, okay, I know, like maybe if I play it again, I know I have to, like, I can't just be collecting the tiles. You can't have a one dimensional game where you only focus on one area. You mm-hmm. have to make sure you're also being strong here or there, but it didn't matter. Cause I didn't like that. The game was giving me enough of a feeling like I could be doing this strategy versus that strategy that I felt the direct aggression in that moment really hurt. Maybe in future games it wouldn't, but in that moment I was like, I don't like this.
Well, maybe that's like, in a sense, a good rule for helping define directed aggression is like, if in a game, a non-two-player game, someone can take something of yours off the board, mm-hmm. like you said, take a hex off or take a wooden piece off. If someone else can do that to you in a game, that's probably directed aggression. And so
yeah.
I think about games like Terraforming Mars or Age of Innovation now that we've played that have plenty of aggression,
mm-hmm.
but you at no point in those games are you taking anyone's piece off the board. Like right. The most aggressive it gets is we are racing to control certain hexes. And so sometimes you feel cut off.
Right.
And you are cut off. Like, and you know, someone kind of won a battle or a race to kind of secure a critical piece of the map. But I think like in what's the like modern Euro tradition now, generally you don't take other pieces off the board. Mm-hmm. And like, and that's even a distinction that Terraforming Mars makes, by the way, that I think is to its benefit is like, I'm complaining about certain cards where I'm affecting someone's production or maybe their resources, but you never affect the map.
Mm-hmm.
You never take somebody's piece off the map in mm-hmm. Terraforming Mars, which I think is a strength. You can count yeah. on when I've placed something down on the map, it's going to be there till the end of the game.
I think that there's also something to be said for managing players' expectations because, so in the case of Cosmic Frog, the game had given me a sense that I could do this thing. And in my mind, whether it was realistic or not, because I know I was told all the rules, but in my mind, I thought like, oh, I can just do this and this will be my strategy. It like let me feel like this was a viable thing when it wasn't. And I think that sometimes, so in that case, the game was not, as I was sort of like saying before, like the game was not protecting the vibe in a way. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important in those situations too, that players are real, like when people are teaching, to really, to maybe make it even more explicit. Like, hey, just so you know, you've got to like, be careful. This can be, you can collect these pieces, but someone's going to come and try to take them. And that is the nature of the game. So like, enjoy
plan
that.
Plan accordingly.
Plan accordingly, but also like, allow, like, know that that's actually that is the fun of the game. It's not like the flaw of the game.
Right.
And like, I think sometimes there's an element of that, like a teacher, whoever's teaching the game can go a long way to help wrap your brain around the
proper tone.
But
do you want to play that game though? Do you want to play the sandcastle kicking down game?
I think I'm trying to think of examples where the tone has like, where someone has said, hey, just so you know, this can happen.
Yep.
And I've been really good about that, and therefore I've been able to have a better time with the game as a result. Because I think that, again, because you know what, it's like, it's in those moments, to bring it all the way back, it's like in those moments, someone's saying, hey, I care about your feelings, and I want to make sure that you have the right mental state for this, because I don't want you to have a bad time.
Right.
And like, sometimes just being looked after makes you feel somehow like more like, you know what, like it is a good time, like who cares. And I find that for me, I'm also significantly more sensitive to aggression when I'm not liking the game,
mm-hmm.
because whether this is reasonable or rational, there's a feeling of like, I'm having a bad time and now you came and you punched me while I was having a bad time, and I like, it makes you feel like that's not fair. Like, right. You get this childlike thing of like, you're mean. That's not fair.
Right.
I'm like I'm barely enjoying myself. And now you've actually just like kicked me when I'm down. And it's not the other player's obligation necessarily to tend to that. But
in those moments, we're playing the long game, which is the game of friendship. You know, is the game of relationships and having a good time in our lives. That's the never ending game. The infinite game that we're playing, that we should be prioritizing.
And so when I played Voodoo Prince this past weekend, I talked about my friend Nate, who had in the final round this outside chance of actually zooming past Neil and I and winning the game. In the first round, he was the first one who was out, and I was the one who put down the card that made sure that he won the third trick. So he was out in the very first round first, and he had a look on his face, and I don't know if he was upset or not.
Right.
Because he's like in a corporate.
But it's like a little exec. Mini knockout. Yeah.
Yeah. He is a corporate exec, and he sort of has this, he has a very stoic face. And I was like, why did I do that? I was like, I know I did it because I was like, oh, let me do this.
I may come to regret that.
But also,
that.
Like, I may have actually, like this is sort of it's a delicate moment when you want people to buy into a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I knocked him out first. Why did I do that? That's actually like, mm-hmm. I did it because I was looking out for my game.
Right.
But I was not looking out for the group vibe. And luckily, so that's why I was so happy when then later on, he stayed with it. And then he was like, oh my God,
I might have gotten lucky.
I got lucky.
Yeah, that might have been a mistake.
And it's like, I think you just have to be so careful with direct aggression, because you were playing with people's emotions.
That's right. Yeah. As a final point, like I haven't played Cosmic Frog. The directed aggression thing can, like, in its defense, like, it can make a game much richer. Like, there's the expectations thing, there's the emotional thing, and I think there's a reason why this doesn't interest me so much. But I think without directed aggression in something like Through the Ages, and I suspect with Cosmic Frog also, the game would simply be build your engine, then convert it to points. Like, that's not that interesting of a game. Mm-hmm. There's this lovely dance in Through the Ages of different strategies of, I can be like military dominant. Mm-hmm. I can be military just survive. You know, where I'm just strong enough that I am not preyed upon.
Right.
And that might be that can easily be a winning strategy. And without that balance, and part of it is that the wildebeest phenomenon is a potential.
Yeah.
Every single time that you can't, you know, you're risking getting wildebeested often in that game, and it makes it very rich. And like, that's an excellent game. It's also one I don't want to play with humans. So I think that's where I'm kind of ended up. And again, like when I was younger, I think I would have been okay with it now, but we are playing a different game now.
But also like, Through the Ages, it makes you feel like you have a viable chance of winning the game by saying, hey, I'm going to do this science strategy. I'm basically going to turtle. I think when a game says like, oh, you can turtle and you'll be fine, If it implies that, and then it turns out you can't, you're like, oh, what
the
hell?
Bad expectations.
And that's where like the Lorenzo expansion goes wrong, because a lot of times the games where direct aggression works, you know, I mentioned Survive, Escape from Atlantis, which is again, a game from 1981. It's super, super fun. It's great for kids and great for adults.
It's not a complicated game.
Great game.
To teach.
But like, There's a sense everyone's going to get hit by some calamity at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, you didn't let my meeple join your rowboat to get to safety. Well, guess what? I just sent a whale at your rowboat, and now you're all in the water, and here comes a shark, and now you're all dead. And like, you're laughing.
It's deliciously mean. Yes.
Yeah. Or I'm assuming this is what you get in Thunder Road Vendetta, right? Like, everyone gets hit at some point. But like, when you have the Lorenzo expansion, like, maybe that expansion, where if everyone's playing those cards, then yes, everyone's gonna get hit. But like, I don't want to. Right. I'm not.
What you signed up for.
It's not what I signed up for. But also, there's a better card for me that doesn't do that. So if I'm the only one that's not using that card, then I'm gonna be the one that gets.
So much of that game is sequencing and planning, and then here's this thing that just comes in and ruins all of that.
I would like to talk as we wrap this up. I would like to talk about some games where I feel like they do
great
direct aggression well.
Okay.
I mentioned Sons of Anarchy. I thought that was a really good example of direct aggression. I had this Voodoo Prince. You know, Voodoo Prince is sort of, I guess. That was a positive moment that turned around. That's
like
a bad
trick takers. You often like ruin people's plans, even when you're not like collecting tricks on yourself. You're ruining other people's plans through your card play a lot.
Right, and you're, I guess with Voodoo Prince, you're forcing people out. I don't know. Maybe not a great example. I guess. You know, I've found that with 18XX games, direct aggression there can that's people, I guess that's sort of like a draw, because some people have a really tough time when they get a company dumped on them,
right?
Or they go bankrupt. That's really hard for them. But others, like, that is kind of like the high stakes that make it so exciting. So I like it there. But Sky Mines, I recently played Sky Mines with Jordan and Matt. And that's a game where you have company, you know, you're investing in companies, and the how well a company does is dependent on how many of its little houses are on the board. And recently we played a game where Matt came in and he took two of the company houses off the map. And it was like, that was aggressive towards me and Jordan, because we had invested heavily in that.
Right.
It felt right. It did not feel like a nasty moment.
Well, almost by definition, when you're saying it hurt me and Jordan, that feels different than it only hurt Ben. And right. And he wasn't just choosing, oh, I have to hurt somebody, I'm going to hurt Ben.
But even if it were just me,
yeah,
I'd be like, I get it.
Stock position that needs to be attacked for him to win.
Recently, we played The Rich and the Good, you, Matt, Paul, and I. And I remember when we played, like, at one point, like, someone played a card and one of the commodities went up. And then the next person played a card and went all the way back down. And I think you said, oh, this is a mean game. I think you said that. If not you, someone said it.
It's probably
the plays. And it's like,
I played very poorly in my first game. I remember that.
But it's like, it's mean, but we're all going to be doing it to each other. So it doesn't feel mean to me.
Oh, let me correct you on this. I felt like, oh, I think you did to me in that game what you were talking about with in Voodoo Prince, which is like, you taught me the game and then you punched me below the belt on like turn two.
And yeah, I didn't even realize.
Because I think the mechanism we're talking about specifically here is that you're often choosing which card am I going to play at full value versus which card I'm going to play at half value. Mm-hmm. And so when you chose to play a negative six card, which on my position in T.
Yeah, you're
like
right.
That, you were singularly attacking Trey's position. It was a four-player game. You were singularly attacking my position on turn two. Now, I set myself up for that. Like, I kind of deserved it. But it was also like, okay, I'm out, because I actually had like a money problem after that. So like my entire game was, I just want to make sure I don't come in last and that I can, someone other than Ben is going to win.
I didn't even realize. And it's funny because I can't even go back and say why I chose that. Like, I have to imagine that, I don't know.
An interesting game in terms of the dynamics.
But it was interesting though, because in that moment I was not considering you, and I just was like, oh, I feel like I should play this six card. And but it's like, it just shows, like, I do think that there's value in considering fellow players and making them have a fun experience, and like I
am okay with that game being mean.
Right.
I'm eager to play that game again, and I think it has some really interesting dynamics where, like, in a sense, like, I'm not saying you made a mistake.
Right.
But I think there's a natural thing that happens, especially in the four-player game, where you have many alliances with the players to your left mm-hmm. and right, right? Because you're sharing a certain amount of information in terms of, you can see what's going to happen. So how do you maintain these many alliances? Whereas the person diagonally across from you, this has some fluidity in terms of how it plays out. But like, generally, you don't have anything in common. So I think they naturally should be an enemy. I thought there were some interesting things coming out there where, like, I came away from that game mm-hmm. of like saying, hey, Matt, we could have managed our play on these cards better. And then I felt like you declared war on me from a very early period. And so like, okay, well, that's the way.
And I've been on the receiving end of that exact move, by the way. I've been on totally receiving end where I move something up and then someone just moves it right down. I'm like, you bastard. But I think the difference though is it was literally your first move out of the gate of this game. And to me, I also, having played the game before, I've seen this happen a million times where, like, you move something up and someone just brings it back down, and that's like the ebb and flow of the game, and like, that's the risk. And so in my mind, I thought, well, I didn't think anything else.
All's fair, yeah.
But the truth was, like, I think there is some value in thinking this is your literal first turn, and that by me playing this, I might not be ushering him into the game the way I would want to usher him into the game.
I like to think that I'm a big boy, and I can handle it.
But again, it's about, you are a big boy, and you could, and you did handle it. But also, it's like,
I'm not sure I did.
But like, also, like, why? Like, what? Like, we. Well, this is where it's tricky too, where it's like, at what point, I mean, we do want to take care of our friends' emotions. We do want to play the larger game and make sure everyone's having fun. But also, like at what point do you start taking suboptimal moves for yourself in order to make sure someone else is having fun? I mean, so you could argue that you should always do that and make sure everyone's having fun, you know? But yeah, I actually don't know if I have an answer for that one. Like in that case, like, should I have done, I think it's more important for me to have you get into the game and be like, oh, this is really fun. Right. Like on a note of that, rather than a note of like, the game has started and I already am annoyed about something, you know?
Yeah. I think the strength, like this is the danger in a high interactivity game, is that the interactivity can have some negative feels about it. Like if you want high interactivity, like, and so there is a question here of like, what's the right amount? Mm-hmm. And like in modern Euros, it's curtailed. Mm-hmm. There is a certain degree of acceptable interactivity that we're defining here. And it's not, I destroy your position entirely. And now you have to stay here while you can't really do anything for another 3 hours. Like there's a proper place that feels good for some players and not for others. And, you know, again, like I always like how you root things in your emotions. I'm like, I was definitely I was in my feels when that happened, where like I both recognized, oh, I made a real mistake in how I played this. I set myself up to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of like, hey, why'd you completely wreck my game on turn two, right, Ben? It's like, because it was wreckable. It was like a Gordon Gekko moment.
But yeah. The funny thing, because in my mind, I knew it was like, oh, everything's gonna go up and down so many times. It's not gonna be. This is just the beginning. Don't you worry. But you don't know
it
that.
It actually was a knockout blow.
I didn't know that either. Because in my mind,
because I had not, I had put all of my eggs in one basket.
But the point, right? And I didn't see that. And there was a lot of
things.
You
did nothing wrong.
No, I don't think I did anything wrong either. But it's one of those things where there's a lot of when you're dealing with friends, you're doing an aggressive move. You should do it with some intentionality. Like there should be some thought. Sorry, everyone. That's my Discord going off, and I don't know why it's making noise. But you should be thoughtful, I think, because you are dealing with someone's emotions. Even if it's a game, if you're dealing with someone's emotions, I think that. But I also think that, like, if the larger game, if the context is actually just super fun, if the journey, like Thunder Road Vendetta, has been a blast, that sometimes when you get hit with a feel bad moment, even a big one, it might not matter, because
these are very different games.
When I played Dune for the first time in February, I had an alliance with Tom.
Stake number one.
So, and that's the story. You all know where it goes. No, I had an alliance. I knew he was going to betray me at some point, but I was like, because I know he's going to betray me, I feel like that gives me a weird amount of power, because I'm like, it means that I would rather just like have the space. If I knew that, like when he was like, let's do an alliance, I knew if I said, I'm not going to do the alliance, he was going to seek vengeance on me for rejecting him.
Jeez.
I knew he would.
Dark.
I knew he would. I just knew it. I just had that. Whether he would or not.
Well, it would have been you could have been in an alliance with me.
Exactly.
As I'm chewing on your spine.
He would have done
this
that.
This is what happens when you don't align with me.
You should have aligned with me. I just didn't want to deal with that. And I also felt like, to be honest, it was my first time playing. I also really wanted to actually have the diplomatic moments with him where I could actually learn from him. And because there was actually, it wasn't just like I was afraid of him. It was more like,
Times where all of that's okay, of like you have this threat of directed aggression, and that can create really interesting social things.
A cold war is really cool.
Like, you can do this, but if you do, and you know.
But the point of this is actually that the whole game was really fun. So when Tom did inevitably, you know,
do what he's going to do,
go in and like eradicate everyone of my people, Paul Atreides, excuse me, hero of this book, when he eradicated me from like the capital city,
Erican,
I was like, well, that sucks, but this is a fun game, who cares?
Right,
you know, it's like I knew he was probably gonna do it at some point, and he was like, I wasn't gonna do this, but I
gotta be me.
But actually, he, and to his credit, it looked like he was going to win from it. He had to do it. I don't begrudge him for doing it. But the point was, it could have been like a feel terrible moment for me. Not just a feel bad, a feel terrible moment. But we were having so much fun. you say, who cares? And that's the inverse of when you're having a bad time and someone does something bad, right? And then you're like, screw you.
And maybe that is like your expectation thing. You went in kind of knowing what it was. You kind of knew what was going to happen. You enjoyed the journey. Your head mentality was correct.
Head mentality, the vibe around the table was right. And that's same with Here I Stand, the vibe around the table. If it's like, you know, Candace's friend Jake, my friend Jake, he showed up dressed in like a Renaissance costume for Here I Stand.
Awesome.
It was like he LARPed it. And it's like,
yeah,
when people, it's like you can't help but like, if you don't have fun in those, you know, even though I was miserable sitting there for an hour, I was like, it's still like you can't, like he managed the tone at the table in his own way.
And I look forward to a future game of the rich and the good with you and Paul and Jordan. That's completely mean. Like I feel like, okay, I know the deal now. And like, I'm ready to explore that space. Like I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And like, again, I don't even think Rich and the Good is mean. It's just like there, you have to play some of these cards. You could do it in a mean way. I guess because we all get hit with the mean stick. Like everyone gets hammered. Like everyone's stock gets that hit.
Yeah.
And so you don't take it. It's not direct. Doesn't feel as directed. I will say two more recommendations because I got sidetracked here. Lords of Vegas is a wonderful. It's just a great game. No one has ever had 1% a bad time playing it. But that's. Well, I'll protect their identity. But Lords of Vegas, it's a super fun game of building casinos in Vegas. And inevitably, have you ever played a Trey?
I think, yeah. Isn't this what, James Ernest and Mike Selnaker? Is that correct?
I think so.
But it's like your casinos, you're placing dice.
It's over there if you want to do the spot check of the designers. Making Trey. To the right. Yes, your finger's right there. But basically you're building casinos and then like you are like the boss of the casino, but other people can have presence in your casino. And then they may say, hey, I want to take over this casino. So then you roll a whole bunch of dice and then you may lose out on running the casino.
Yes. James Ernest, Mike Selnaker.
And, there could be feel bad moments in that, but it's rollicking fun. It's like, it's great. And then the last one I want to mention is the game Maria, which is a war game. And that one is you.
See, that's almost different though, because like Maria is what it, that's a carefully balanced game between three players, right?
Yes.
Because that one's Maria specifically three.
You're right. I already see where you're going with this. Because it's
like it almost takes its entire subject is how do you balance a three-way contest kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. But the point is you're still
what's the four player one? Is
Friedrich. Yeah.
See, Friedrich has more of a, well, but Friedrich is by definition three versus one.
Right.
Right. So
it's literal direct aggression against Friedrich player.
But it's straightforward, right? I'm saying like, this is what I'm complaining about is the, oh, hey, here's this negative thing. Mm-hmm. Who do I choose to receive this negative thing?
Yeah. I may have conflated again, feel bad moments. Like in Maria, if you lose a battle, you don't feel, you're just like, well, I didn't play my cards right.
Yeah.
You know, you're not saying like, oh.
It's literally a battle on a map game. So, you know.
It's a great game too.
That is what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think those are the ones off the top of my head where I thought like, these are games of direct aggression. Forbidden Stars, obviously, but no one can get that anywhere. But I think direct aggression has a place.
Yeah, absolutely.
It has to be handled properly. And it's not easy to handle.
And I'm just identifying some places where like it doesn't feel good, or even like I love this, but I just don't want to play it with humans.
And you know? By the way, I said I was going to put a pin. I know we're kind of like trying to land the plane here, and I keep on taking off again. But I did say I was going to put a pin in something, and I didn't unpin it. And I don't want to leave people hanging. I said when you are the victim of a direct aggression, and like if you do feel like there is that an aggressive energy behind it too. In the way that a player speaks or acts, or like there's like those certain X factors in communication.
Sometimes it feels like there's a little bit of intent.
Those moments just hit harder and hurt more. And so that's why I think it's really important to really just be mindful of your table presence. And I say this as someone who obviously, you know, like many other people, it's like it's easier said than done. But that's I think it's just all about just caring for other people, like not caring, but you know, looking out for everyone, make sure everyone's still having a good time.
Right.
You know?
And that may be part of what started this discussion was that moment when we were playing Terraforming Mars, where I'm delivering this negative effect on Chris Bussey just because that's who I can do it to. Mm-hmm. And it's the right thing for me to do in my game, but I'm also like, I'm victimizing him. And that does not feel great.
Yeah. Yeah. So the point is be nice to your friends, everyone. I think
but sometimes that means choose what you want to play. Mm-hmm. You know, don't, like, that's the reason why there's some things I don't really want to play, you know?
Yeah. And which gets back
It's going to be fun for other people, and that's cool.
And it gets back to the original thing with coffee traders about like being vocal about what you're in the mood for, what you're not in the mood for, and like being honest with yourself. And I guess maybe also being okay with, like, it's probably better to be honest than to say like, no, I'll get through this. I don't know. I guess it's all tied together in one big emotional mess. Okay. Well, I think that's it, Trey. I think we did it. I think we explored we bared our souls to everyone.
I've worked out all my aggression.
I know. I think I have too. So anyway, you have been listening to Game Brain, produced and edited by Matthew Robinson, Tom Donnelly, Trey Alsop, and Ben Mandelker. Special thanks to Daedalus for our incredible music. More on Daedalus at GameBrainPod.com. And thanks to Edamar Peleg for our incredible graphics. Be sure to check him out on Instagram at Kribuloni or his website, Kribuloni.com. You can reach us by email at contact@GameBrainPod.com. Thanks for listening, and go play some games with friends or make some friends with games.